gitu. Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any apologies for this meeting? We have received an apology from the minister. May you just present the apologies if there are any.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, members. We've got an apology from Ms. Mutapo. We also have an apology from the deputy minister. And we also have an apology from the committee researcher. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks a lot. Are those apologies in writing? Eh? I've only
yes,
seen
sir,
the one of the minister. Okay. No,
yes,
thanks
sir,
a lot. Let me pass my greetings to the honorable members and to General Sangwe and the good doctor, that you are welcome to this meeting. And my assumption is that by the end of this meeting, we should have gotten answers to some of the issues that were raised in the last meeting. Among them is the NDIC possible policy options. We'll like briefings again in matters related to the defense sector code and the health of the National Defense Industry Fund. What is health situation? And the task team on Don Dinel. And even reports on resources based alternative funding models. For me, this will be my assumption is that by the time we're through with this meeting, those issues are.
Chairperson, are you there? Hello?
Yeah, it seems Honorable Murray, the chair is in the meeting. His mic is also on.
Yeah, I see that as well.
Yeah.
But there seems to be no response.
I'm trying to go through.
Chair, are you okay?
I was lost. I'm now found.
Oh,
I was lost and I'm found.
You are lost.
Who is giving the presentation? Sorry about.
Welcome back. Welcome back.
Chair, what's the problem?
Hello.
The network is there.
Am I audible?
Yes, you are audible. Whoever has said that the network is dead, at least we can hear the person, so it's not that dead.
Okay, thanks. Let's get the presenter to give us the report. for the NDIC. Who's leading the delegation? Is this
I am chairperson from the DOD. It's me who's leading. The DM is abroad and the minister has tendered an apology. Is the sector speaking?
No, yeah. There's no problem with the apologies. Can you we get the report? The apologies I think are accepted because if they are not members, we'll have said something. You may go ahead, ma'am.
I see the co-chair is also here.
Welcome, Honorable Kaba. Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, we are presenting on one item today, and that is to provide the Joint Standing Committee with an update on the on the status of our defense industry at our Charter Council, which is the council that actually looks into the defense industry as a whole, that they are delivering on the Charter Code on defense aspect of the defense industry performance, and then also contrasting it, and we will also touch.
Chairperson, can I just ask? I'm not quite sure from where the sector is operating, but her connection is very, very bad.
Yeah, I thought it was my line.
No, it's on the SecDef side.
And then
SecDef, we can't hear you. You are breaking up. We can't follow anything that you
are saying. Okay. I'm sitting in the same space.
Just go
I'm
up.
I'm not
please.
So sure what. Oh, okay. No, but Chairperson, I think it's those three items. Well, it's one presentation that is broken up in a number of parts, and the Defence Sector Charter Council, the performance of our South African defense industry, and the initiatives that have been initiated as a result of the strategy that was developed and adopted in 2020. And that talks to the defense and master plan. And I have with me Dr. Kanyile, who will take us through the presentation, and then we'll have the discussions thereafter. Thank you, Chair. Dr. Kanyile, will you upload and present? Oh, okay, thank you.
Good evening, Honorable Chairperson and the co-chairperson, honorable members of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, Secretary for Defense, ladies and gentlemen. My presentation seeks to provide a status feedback on the Defense Sector Charter Council, the industry performance, and some initiatives that NDIC has been involved in support of the industry. On the issue of the council, the committee will recall that this council was established following the promulgation of the Defense Sector Code. It is responsible for the overall implementation of the code. The minister is the overall authority responsible for the appointment of the Charter Council members, which the minister has already done. She appointed members of the council in 2020, which enabled the council to start operating. As things stand, it has the relevant structures to do its work, including relevant committees such as the Audit and Risk Committee. The council is constituency-based, meaning it has got it is required to be a representative of the relevant stakeholders in there. it has been constituted properly and has all the relevant players from the DOD, from AMSCO, from the AMD, which is the industry association, from the military veterans, labor unions, the Defense Industry Fund, and the Department of Trade, Industry, and Competition as the custodian of all other charters. The committee is aware that this code, which brought about the council, is the youngest of them all, having been gazetted only in April 2019. It's the 11th of, there are 11 codes in the country, and the 11th one is this one, the Defense Sector Code. Now, the responsibility of the Charter Council is to do a whole lot of things, including the establishment of the Enterprise and Supplier Development Fund. The code states that there has to be this fund established, and such fund must become operational within 12 months after the promulgation of the code. Now, the code was established, was gazetted on 12th April 2019, which means in terms of this process, the fund will have been operational by the first anniversary of the code, which will be 2020. But because of factors beyond the control of the council, this could not happen, and it is now possible that the fund can proceed and do its work. The fund is meant to fund Black-owned entities in the industry to engage in activities that promote manufacturing in the industry, to promote innovative Black-owned technology entities, and also to develop intellectual property. The council has been involved, has been conducting a bidding process for the appointment of a fund manager. This has now been finalized and the fund manager has been appointed. Even the relevant guidelines for the allocation of funds have been approved by the council, which means the council is functional. It continues to engage various stakeholders, including entities in the industry. And as expected by the code, the council is busy collecting data that will be used for the compilation of the State of Transformation Annual Report. The budget allocation for the council is linked to the DOD's medium-term expenditure framework, which will enable it to be capacitated properly. Concerning the industry performance, the committee members will recall that one of the controversial issues has been around South Africa's trade relations with some countries in the Middle East, in particular, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the UAE. However, this matter has now been resolved, which has resulted in $5.5 billion rand worth of transactions immediately after the approval of transactions by the NCACC. However, this was not without any losses. 2 billion rand worth of opportunities were lost because of the impasse and the delays emanating from the concerns that the country had about Saudi Arabia and UAE. As things stand, there's a potential 21 billion rand worth of transactions that are in the pipeline, which still needs to be unlocked. Just to provide context, the 5 billion rand that we're talking about pales into significance when you look at some other countries that are operating in the same space. For illustrative purposes, we took the period from 2016 to 2020, where the major countries like US, the USA, UK, France, Germany have been involved in the two countries. We're taking the US for starters, 28.9 billion over that period has been imported by Saudi Arabia. UAE, 72.4 billion. The UK has 5 billion compared to 11.9 billion for UAE. France, the transactions, its transactions with Saudi Arabia cumulatively were around 13 billion, whereas with Germany, these were around 8.4 billion. Now, as for China and Russia over that period, the focus was elsewhere because their main focus is more in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and countries like Algeria. Now, the decision by NCACC to allow South Africa to trade with these countries has opened a lot of opportunities, but unfortunately, this has also been coupled with a lot of lost opportunities and actually various types of threats, including the fact that some companies were being threatened with blacklisting, which would mean that they will never be able to conduct any business in those countries. In some cases, there was no movement in terms of negotiations for future contracts. At the same time, it opened space for the competitors to get into that into this market, while South Africa was busy considering these issues. And it has definitely jeopardized the standing of the country and the industry in those countries. And therefore, it is important that something be done, that a comprehensive, coherent strategy be developed to undo the damage and also to re-engage all these countries from those regions. There's still an issue to deal with as far as Oman is concerned, because the negotiations around the end user certificate, the new end user certificate of South Africa, was accepted by other countries like Saudi Arabia and UAE. However, Oman still wants a further clarity on the implications of this EUC. Pertaining to government support with regard to regulatory framework, it is clear that the NCACC is a key enabler in terms of enabling the local industry to perform. But this is linked to its ability to approve permits and also doing so speedily, because any delays will cause all sorts of challenges with the client nations. The industry feels that in considering permits, it is important for the NCACC to ensure that the primacy of national economic interest remains as other countries do in order to enable the local industry to become competitive in the global market space. In terms of market access, the members of the committee are aware that there's been a steep decline in terms of local consumption, which has now forced the industry to rely on exports. As things stand, just over 3/4 of its production is destined for external market. The industry is urging government to play its active role in terms of marketing local defense industry, just like other major powers do when they engage their diplomatic counterparts. I think this is one thing that has always been said, reiterated by the industry, that other major countries, whenever they have bilaterals, multilaterals in their delegations, they normally include defense industry players. This is because the industry relies on governments, other governments, as clients, and therefore, each time our South African government engages other countries, it is an opportunity to market. And therefore, it is important that delegations are properly constituted to include also defense industry players. A special attention to be paid to countries in Africa, Middle East, and Asia, because that's a growing market for the industry. Now, in addition to what I've just said in terms of challenges that the country, that the industry is facing, the old challenges still remain, even though there are new ones as well. The old one being denial. As an integrator of defense systems, whatever it does has got a ripple effect in the ecosystem of the industry. Given its liquidity challenges, it has led to the total collapse of the SMMEs in the industry space, defense industry space. Linked to that, it is very difficult to talk about transformation at the time when everybody is on their back foot. Skills drain has continued, which will impact on the industry's ability to be innovative and to introduce new products as part of R&D, and also to stay competitive globally. We all know what Dinel's inability to deliver on critical items has had on the defense of South African national defense. So it is important that something be done with regard to DINA. Another challenge is linked to the lawsuits by Open Secrets. A whole bunch of NGOs approached our courts sometime mid-2021. And to look into the permits that were issued by the National Conventional Arms Control to companies that were doing business with Saudi Arabia and UAE. 37 such companies received these papers. Now, obviously, this is still sub judice, but it is important to note that where these NGOs to win these cases, it will potentially obliterate the defense industry in the country. And it is for this reason that the industry believes that government has to play a leading role in terms of defending this litigation against the industry. NCAC is one of the respondents, and therefore it is important that government's role is seen in this basis. But what has been done to support the industry? Members of the committee will recall that in 2019, the NDIC came up with a strategy for the defense industry, and linked to that was a master plan. That master plan was developed and adopted in 2020 under the auspices of the Department of Public Enterprises. In a nutshell, the plan is premised on 4 pillars, which pillars have to be implemented through 13 programs. First pillar is market access Second one is localization. Third one is industry competitiveness. And the last one is development and inclusion. In terms of programs, the first one looks at how the defense industry products could be doubled in the medium term. It looks at government-to-government marketing program for both aerospace and defense. It looks at efforts to increase the special defense account instead of depleting it, that it be beefed up. And also creating a maintenance, repair and overhaul hub and center of excellence within the OR Tambo Special Economic Zone environment. It goes on to look at how certain selected products can be replaced in total, while at the same time looking at least two home-built programs that will have been identified last year, and also some catalytic space programs. It also proposes as part of Pillar 3 that the Centurion Aerospace Village be implemented properly and capacitated, and at the same time also implementing various funding and finance support mechanisms for the industry. And also reviewing the IP portfolio for commercialization and exploitation by the industry. In Pillar 4, this looks at how skills within the industry could be developed and retained. And also looking at things that can be done within the safety environment by using various technologies and mechanisms out there. Part of the plan is also to look, the plan also includes as part of its oversight, the establishment of an executive oversight committee, which was to be chaired by the Minister of Public Enterprises. In fact, when this plan was adopted in 2020, it was loaded as one of the most progressive documents in the sector developed thus far. So we had the industry strategy and then the plan. However, the industry feels that while it was busy doing everything on its side to be ready for the implementation of the industry of this plan, not much was done on the side of government. And it is here where there is a request that maybe Parliament might do something to kind of inject some energy for the benefit of the industry and the country. The second strategic intervention, members will recall, is that is that of the designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition. And this particular initiative sought to ensure that there is local production of small caliber weapons and ammunition, and that AMSCO should be empowered to procure centrally all security related, all of these weapons and ammunition for the whole security cluster environment. In April last year, a presentation was made by ENDIC to the DG's JCPS cluster, and the cluster endorsed the presentation, and ENDIC was tasked to go back and establish whether there is capacity for manufacturing these items, that is now the small caliber weapons and ammunition, and also whether AMSCO will be ready to do this, and furthermore, to solicit the support of National Treasury, which ENDIC went back and did. It did confirm that the industry does have the capacity to do this and stands ready to manufacture these weapons and ammunition as may be required. Similarly with AMSCO, They confirmed that they are ready to procure for the state, subject to just slight augmentation of capacity, depending on the demand from government. National Treasury was equally supportive of the initiative and was waiting for further guidance from government. Where ENDIC got a bit of a challenge was when it requested SAPS, the South African Police Services, to provide certain data which will be used to establish issues such as factors such as the different types of service pistols and weapons that are used by the state agencies, such as SAPS, the SANDF, SSA, the various metropolitan police structures, simply by virtue of SAPS being the custodian of the firearms register in terms of the Firearms Act. Unfortunately, we could not get that data, and the chairperson of ENDIC, the Secretary for Defense, engaged the National Commissioner on the matter to no avail. So as things stand, we still don't have the data. Now the importance of the data is to also, amongst other things, to establish the economic viability of designation, because it will not make sense to call for the designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition only to find that from an economic point of view, there are not enough numbers, there's no economies of scale, and investments, there will be no return, respectable or credible return on investment in the infrastructure, equipment, capacity related to this particular designation. So this is where we have a challenge. But besides that, the next step that ENDIC is going for is to go back to the JCPS DG's cluster for approval. Because once there is that approval, only then will the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition move forward with designation. That is where we are with regards to this particular intervention. Now, the industry is dealing with a whole host of challenges. And these challenges are cross-sectoral, they are interdepartmental, they require various interventions by different agencies and departments, and therefore it is important that there is a coherent way of looking at the industry challenges. It was for this reason, members of the committee, that ENDIC decided that there must be a defense industry lekgotla, which will get around the table all the relevant role players of the industry, including the ministers and deputy ministers of deputy and military veterans, the ministers and deputy ministers from the defense and military veterans and public enterprises, parliamentary committees on defense, policymakers, academics, and industrial representatives, just to come up with a coherent national view on how these matters can be dealt with. So it is envisaged that this will be done sometime in April, all subject to confirmation of logistical arrangements. We're looking at an audience size of between 150 and 200 to sit somewhere in Pretoria over a two-day period. Another very crucial intervention is on the intellectual property commercialization. At ENDIC's last meeting on 13 October 2021, the industry came to make a presentation on the need for DoD IP commercialization. Now, ENDIC took a resolution that given that AMSCO is the custodian of all the DoD IP assets, and that AMSCO has got an existing policy on IP governance, it should go back and look into its current policy and come up with a transparent process that could be used in order for the industry to access DoD IP for economic exploitation. AMSCO is currently busy with that exercise. We're hoping that we will have the first, we'll get feedback of this exercise at the upcoming ENDIC meeting, which is scheduled for mid-March. In conclusion, members of the committee, the council, we can confirm, is that it is operational and is now forming part of the DoD's MTEF planning, that NCACC, as a key enabler, has been taking decisions that have really helped the industry to plug in again into the markets, especially considering the battering that it has suffered due to COVID-19 and all these matters. The elephant in the house remains Denel, which needs to be sorted out, and speedy and decisive interventions are required in order to salvage Denel, because Denel represents the whole industry globally. It has got a brand status and standing that no other company in the country has, because of what it has done in the past, and therefore it is important that something is done urgently. The continued support of government in terms of the industry during its diplomatic engagements is important. That must continue. And this is an international best practice. It's not like it's odd or it's just something done uniquely for South African local defense industry. It is international best practice. It's just that maybe it is not properly executed on the side of the South African community. The litigation by the NGOs against the industry is really threatening the survival of the industry in many ways, pretty much along the lines of the demise of Denel. This will be the last nail because the market that is under scrutiny is the only major market for the South African products. A lot has gone into investment in creating relations in that particular region. Products are already there that are being maintained. And therefore, if anything were to happen and upset that, it is obvious that some countries might just not give the industry a second chance. More focus has to be given to the implementation of the master plan. The master plan is the last hope of the industry. It is the mechanism that aligns the thinking around the country in terms of what has to be done for the aerospace and what has to be done for the defense industry. Chairperson, that concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the presentation. Is there another presentation after this one?
Not from our side, Chairperson. It's the only presentation that was on the agenda for today.
Okay, thanks a lot. Honourable members, there's a detailed input and some of the questions, things that I said, I need to hear. Some of them I had them, others I did not. Let's give over to members to engage with the presentation. Let me look at the hands.
Honorable Mind Tepper.
And Ntate Mafanya and Honorable Ryder in that order.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, SecDef and Dr. Kangiris for the presentation. Much appreciated. I actually hope that that we will have a more regular interaction with the defense industry, because I think the defense industry is not only important for South Africa and for job creation and growing the economy, but it's particularly important for the SANDF and the safety and security of our country. So I hope that we will have more regular interactions. And just a remark, I think that Lafotla is a great idea, is to get everybody there and us, that we can listen to the defense industry stakeholders. And I think that's a great initiative. If I could just go back to the presentations that has been given. When you talked about the defense sector charter, you refer to membership, and I am not quite sure whether DNL is per implication part of AMD, or whether it is, part of something else, because I see the Department of Trade and Industry is involved, the labor unions, Defense Industry Fund, but I don't see specifically reference to DNL. So I just wanted to get that indication. And that where you on point 7 of that slide, where you're referring to the code, the objectives of the code and what it must be utilized for on that fund. When you refer to black-owned entities, is that in terms of how we understand it in the B triple BEE triple BEE format, where it refers to a certain percentage shielding of black-owned shareholders, or is it a 100% black-owned entities, and is it in terms of SMMEs, medium enterprises, or are we talking about bigger enterprises to establish and to create and to support? That is just very, very important for me. If I can go on in terms of what you talked about, the defense industry and its performance, I am pretty pleased and excited the fact that you have sorted out, all the end user certificate problems and the issues with UAE and Saudi and Turkey and Oman. So yes, we have lost a lot of opportunities in business. But hopefully that 5.5 billion that you have indicated will set the tone for going forward. I just wanted to ask what we can do as the Portfolio Committee on Defense and the Joint Standing Committee on Defense. What can we do to assist the industry to even enhance that even further? Especially where I see on that one slide where you talked about the need for government to come and assist the problems that there was that are still with Oman, the requirements that you indicate or imply that you require need and assistance from government. So how can we play a role to try to open that market and to maybe give them a bit of peace of mind, say that, you can trust South Africa, you can trust our industry, you can trust our stakeholders. Then I just wanted to know, when you talk about the NCACC that will become more progressive or should be more progressive, what do you really imply with that? Has there been discussions? Have there been discussions in that regard? And what do you require from us? Then in terms of the open secret, I just want to ask that question. On the last one, you also say the last bullet of that open secret challenge, that you, the industry believes that government must take the lead in this regard. What is the current situation? Has that been discussed with government? Is government taking the lead, and especially with this litigation, because we have to fight that litigation, and I think we all are all behind you. Just on the Denel, you have indicated that, you know, the Denel is a major problem. During our meeting last week, the SecDef has indicated that they have an arms corps in the department approached the defense industry stakeholders in terms of certain development work, for instance, on the missiles, but also on maintenance and spares, manufacturing of spares, of certain infrastructure and equipment of the defense.
We have lost Mr. Murray a little bit. You got cut off, Mr. Murray, for some few seconds, so I think we missed part of what you were saying now. My apologies. Okay.
The last question was just on the Denel. SecDef, you'll recall last week you told us that you have approached industry stakeholders, you and Arms Corps, in terms of development work, for instance, for the missile and for other equipment and for maintenance contracts and that. I just wanted to find what the progress is in that regard and whether certain finalizations have been done there. On the aerospace master plan and you know, that all those four pillars sounds fantastic, and if we can do that as a collective, I think that is great, and that can certainly help the industry, but it can certainly help the defense force as well. When you look at those strategic interventions, I just wanted to make sure, why is the Minister of Public Enterprises involved in the Executive Oversight Committee? And I've got no problem in terms of the Minister of Public Enterprises, but I think we've questioned many times in the past. So what is the role of the Minister of Defense? What is the role of the Department of Defense? Is it just to coordinate? Is it just to provide the secretariat? Because otherwise it seems like the Department of Defense and us are but outside of what is happening in this so-called industry plan. But eventually this industry plan relies heavily on what we do, what the Department of Defense is doing, and obviously, you know, our work as a portfolio committee. On the lack of response from SAPS to buy into this whole program of the small caliber weapons and ammunitions. I mean, I find it quite unacceptable that the National Commissioner's Office is just not responding. So my question is, has this been communicated back to the cluster's ministers? And surely, you know, they should do something there, and they should give a formal instruction to the Commissioner. So what has happened there? So, I mean, that is quite important for me. Chairperson, I think that is to a certain extent what I wanted to ask. I mean, you know, we can go on and on, but I think the Lahotla will probably give for us the best opportunity to interact with the industry and to listen to them directly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Mafanya, I was going to say, the minister is in the meeting. Let's welcome you. Welcome the honorable minister, and thanks for joining us after your long schedule. Sure, thanks. You may continue.
Thank you. Welcome, Minister. Dr. Kanyile, on the internal audit and risk management, in your execution of the responsibility, you should be knowing where on the internal ones, internal audit, it should be giving indications. So I would like to know the health status of the audit or internal audits that should be giving us a direction where we are getting to. Number two, on the issue of Saudi exports, that they are exporting 75% of its production because of the DOD budget decline. Now, looking at it from that perspective, is that if there are indications that we are doing well, because normally Treasury is motivated by clean audits, but if there are issues with audits whereby you have to apply for funding from Treasury, it always becomes a problem that it could be funded properly. So I would like to know about that, because now it has got an effect on the exports, on Saudi exports that become 25 instead of being 100. Then the other part is where we have the skills drain that continues unabated. So when you begin to talk about the skills that goes like that, yeah, for us to regain or have such skills back into the industry, it becomes very, very difficult for it to happen, because a skilled person takes more years to be skilled in the discipline that is trained for. Now, what could be done to retain the skills and equally to bring them back? Because to say you bring new people into the industry, it becomes something else. Taking into account there has been a 90 million deficit on payments of the NEL staff. And then you begin to see that there's no way you can not retain. You can retain skilled people when they are not being paid as well. So I would like you to go and cruise around those ones. And I want to know the impact of the bailout of $3 billion for Danel. What impact could it have had in the current conjecture? Thank you very much. Hello, Chair. Are you still here?
Thanks, Honorable Mafanya. Let me check. Honorable Ryder, it's your turn.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Ryder, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the SecDef and to Dr. Kandida. My first question ties into the comments that you made on Danel, and we had a good presentation last week around Danel, although I'm not sure we've reached conclusion yet. Now, in terms of the NDIC, you're on record in the past that saying that the impact of potentially selling parts of Danel, and specifically it was PMP, the Pretoria Metal Pressings that was referred to in the past, would have a substantial impact in terms of national security and job losses and the small caliber ammunition issues for the SANDF. Now, that has been raised before as an issue, and there's other divisions of Danel as well where there are severe implications to national security and of course to the industry. But now what we're seeing is that the entire industry in South Africa is very closely linked to Danel, and certainly reputationally. I think that what Danel does tends to taint the rest of the industry. So, you spoke about it as the elephant in the house, I think you said. Certainly I believe that it is the big issue that we need to get on top of in terms of where we're sitting at the moment on this particular topic. And the reality is that there needs to be some sort of an indication. Now, you spoke about IP, intellectual property. You spoke about commercialization of IP and the loss. Dr. Kanyile, you've also written extensively about state capture and its impact. Now, I'd like to hear from yourself and from SecDef as well, certainly in terms of the discussions of the NDIC with the Danel turnaround task team. What is this monster going to be salvageable? or are we flogging a dead horse? Where are we now? Now, I do understand and I agree with Mr. Murray to say that, that some sort of a lahotla or a discussion or a panel, a conference is going to help us tremendously and also get us all on board. But if you can just tell us, you know, I'm sure you've had issues, you've had issues in the past where you were to engage with a Denel turnaround task team. So, you know, is this something that's going to happen? And then in terms of Denel's future, you know, there was mention of splitting it up and retaining certain components and selling off others. What is the view in terms of the future of that? And that certainly arises out of last week's meeting as well. The other question that I specifically that I wanted to ask was about the defense and aerospace industry master plan. You know, have we seen any impact from that? And perhaps if the committee could be provided with a copy of that plan, if that is available, I think it would help us in our work and also help us to get a better understanding of where we are. You know, understanding that this committee has got various roles to play, included in that is the NCACC, which I presume works quite closely, or there's some overlaps perhaps with the NDRC. And perhaps that having a copy of that plan will certainly inform us a little bit better. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable, are you still on the floor?
Yes, I'm done. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thanks a lot. And next will be Honorable Kaba. I've already welcomed to in the meeting the co-chair, followed by Honorable Mute, and then Honorable Martha Bartlett in that order. Over to you, co-chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. two things, because my other questions have been covered by the colleagues who've just spoken. One is the marketing strategy. the defense industry marketing strategy that must be developed as a matter of agents. It will assist the committee to monitor the compliance by the various, you know, agencies of government. Because
Honorable Tabo,
you don't hear me.
We can't hear. I'm finding it difficult to hear what you are.
Okay. No, Chair, is it clear now? Is it better? Is it better now?
Yes, I can hear you well.
Thank you so much. Yes, sir.
Hey, your line is so bad.
Chair, I think it was your line that is bad. Mr. Kaba's line was quite good that I picked up.
That is correct. I can hear on our Kaba.
Yeah, I also heard him very, very well.
All right. Let me continue. I think he's still facing some challenges. All right. So it's the marketing strategy that the committee will monitor its implementation and adherence to it by the key role players in government and in other what you call agencies or organs. it's critical because as it is now, I don't know if I'm asked by other chairs of committee, you know, about how we are marketing our products to other countries, because I believe that, like you said, Dr. Kanyele, there is no, in other countries, when a business delegation is put together to accompany the president, you know, or any senior government official on a foreign mission or international mission, they will not leave out people from the defense industry, especially if it is a country where we think we can have they can actually open up a market for our own products. We know those countries and that are potentially our market as a country. So it's very critical. And it's also very critical that when, for example, as chairs of committees and leaders of various parties and heads of other institutions, we meet with the foreign dignitaries. Number one, we should know which countries we target. And if we happen to come to contact with those countries in our various responsibilities, we place this item on the agenda, you know, for discussion, so that we all become the agents of our own industry. So I think that's important, because that strategy must target those heads of various agencies of government when they interact with other key stakeholders from abroad. So I think we need to work on that. And two, I am excited that you are proposing a lekgotla that will bring together the relevant key stakeholders so to come up with a national coherent view of how we need to deal with these issues. But I'm also disappointed at the same time that the national commissioner has not seen it fit to work with you on this small caliber weapons and the ammunition designation program and how we take it forward, because it's very key. I mean, we the police, I'm told, they buy stuff from abroad when we can produce it locally. I'm told that some municipal metro police, they buy some stuff, small caliber weapons and ammunition from abroad when we have capacity internally to produce. But there again, we need to understand their needs so that we are able to scale up the production levels to meet the demand. But that can only be possible if they talk to you, you know, and the metros talk to you about their needs, and the police and other security people in the security industry. So I think I'm disappointed that we have not made a breakthrough in respect of talking to the National Commissioner of Police with respect to that particular assignment. And I understand you expected him to coordinate the information, and at least from the side of the police right up to the municipal metro level. And then my last point, Chair, is the no. I think, Chair, I'm basically covered by the presentation, and I'm excited that they finally we now have a council that is up and running, and we can then start to really coordinate our approach as government on the issue of this industry. But what is missing in the presentation, maybe at some point we must ask for it, it's the industry's contribution to economic development of our country. And the industry's contribution to job creation, industry's contribution to beneficiation, so that we can get that appreciation, you know, as a country, how much this industry is contributing.
Chair, have we lost the chair? I didn't hear him for a bit. My apologies. I think from my side it was cut.
Yes.
I had, Chairperson, I had no problem following you. You were absolutely clear. So check that maybe it's your line that was earlier also not good. But I hear Mr. Kabo very well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Mare. Let me just repeat because you'll be expected to respond. So if I'm saying at some point we need to get your presentation needs to focus on the contribution by the industry into the economic development of our country, the economic development of our country, to job creation, to issues of beneficiation, so that we get the appreciation of the extent to which the industry, you know, take up the extract from our raw material, convert it and then into a final product and sell it abroad, as opposed to selling a final product and only to buy it and buy it back at a huge at higher prices. That's what's going to happen if as a country we don't try and preserve to protect the industry. So we need that presentation so that we focus on the economic side of it. Thank you so much, SACDEF.
Thanks a lot, Coach, for the input and questions. There's Honorable Mute, followed by Bartlett, and then Kenny's iPhone. I think that must be Honorable Mutamai.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and good evening to everyone on the platform. Chair, I have only two areas that I want to speak to and solicit clarity. One is on the issue of transformation that the presentation spoke to in relation to what is transpiring in Tinel, which the presentation speaks to total collapse of the study SMMEs companies. And that, according to them, has impacted negatively on the transformation agenda. I want to be clarified because AMSCO, as a procurement agency of the DoD, is responsible to procure in totality the needs as identified by DoD, from serviceability of aircraft to to cut it short, maybe let me just say serviceability of all machinery or instruments or tools of all services of the defense force. Now they are sitting with a transformation charter at their disposal. Even if Dinel is not doing well, they continue to procure directly from those companies within the industry. And there is no excuse to suspend the transformation charter in driving the transformation agenda that we seek to see and use Dinel as an excuse. I don't think that should be the case. Maybe they can clarify why is it the case, but I don't see why the transformation agenda is not pursued, even if Dinel is having challenges, because those that are still participating in the procurement of AMSCO should be able to comply with AMSCO should at all material times enforce that transformation charter. Secondly, Chair, I know on the issues of litigations, the presenter said these are still sub judice, but I just want to have an understanding of the impact of these cases in terms of the possible losses that the industry is anticipating. Shall these cases not be in their favor? And again, they need government to intervene and assist in those processes. Have they engaged with government? How far are they in terms of the engagement? And what are the possible outcome of those engagement? If they had been constantly engaging with government to assist in that regard. And I think, Chair, maybe my last point is out of what Comrade Kawa has raised. I'm just wondering if the role of NCACC is only looking at export. Is it looking only at import, not export? So I just want to get clarity, because some of the things that have been raised by Honorable Kaba, that other state department or government department and entities and municipalities, so forth and so on, they do not procure from the industry that we have or capability. They utilize the capabilities that we have in the country and decide to go procure outside. Is that regulated or what is happening? Because if it is not, then we must begin to engage with NCACC to expand their mandate so that at least there's some regulation. Before anybody else goes outside, it should be regulated that they can only go outside if the industry cannot meet their demand, rather than to undermine the industry and go procure elsewhere. Whilst these are some of the things that leads to the demise of the of the industry and led to the demise of Tinel. So I'll leave it there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mute. I think Honorable Bartlett, followed by Mutamai.
Thank you very much, Chair. I must just apologize because of weather's bad on the side, so that I'm not switching my video on. And then the second thing is, the previous speaker already covered me on most of the things. But I just want explanation from the team who present on the four pillars, starting with the master plan, because I went too fast on that issue of the master plan. I just don't understand it. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Bartlett. Next will be Honorable Mutamai.
Thank you, Chair.
And then after Honorable Mutamai, I see the hand of Honorable Maliake.
Thank you, Chair.
Remutamai.
Chairperson.
Remutamai.
Dinele na ya bontsha ka nna go seletsa kgatello ne ya bontsha matla gore ya ena le bokgoni ba gore e ka kgona go ikemela o go nka competition le mafatshe ka kakaretso. Jwale bothata bo ke nang le bone ke gore ga re tsaya 55 billion re fa Dinele, and mo Dinele go tletse matlheko a nang le gore bašwa re ka investa mo bašweng gobane country ka o fela gobaneng re sa batle batho ba e leng Good ahead, Chair.
Hold on, Tamay, I can't hear you.
Okay.
Chairperson. Yes, no, Tamay.
Kere, Dinele in the Abunta Mata, low computer, Malele Mafati Lena Kabuha, Kabukhun, who went out in Alabukhun, Babu said, you did it. Jwale bothata bo ke nang le bone boiwane gore ga o tsaya 55 billion o fa Dinele, go tletse maqheku mo Dinele ba ba senang bone matla ao a e leng gore a sebedisiwa no yana mafatsheng ka bophara. O tsebe gore na batho ba investile mo baneng mo bašweng gore ba tle ka tlhaloganyo tse fresh tse di ka kgonang gore di thuse Dinele. Gobaneng rona ka obale o ka shebelela one palamente ya rona go tletse maqheku a leng gore a bagolo ba robala, like ga o shebelela nna le wena le ba bangwe, we are over 59 and sentse re tlo o nna for more than 5 years ntse re le mone. Gobaneng re sa fe bana youth e kgone go tla ka tlhaloganyo e fresh e leng gore ba ka kgona gore ba uplifte Dinele. Ke a leboga, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mutamai, for your input. When we need scientists, even if they are 80 years old, we'll take them because they've got knowledge, and there'll be young people who will be working under them to learn. I just thought many industries have that succession plans within them. Honorable Minister, I was talking to this only, it's a chance for Honorable Maliake, sorry, Oyomale, I kindly give my input before you. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My problem, Chairperson, is given that that the Minister of Denial has resulted in the collapse of SADI. So what will be the consequences if it takes long or takes time to salvage Denial? Just checking if there is no other means or other options, because my feeling is that it may take long to salvage, I mean, Denial, considering that the budget of the Department of Defense has been cut, you know, making it difficult for defense companies to survive. Again, Chairperson, the relationship between the Department of Defense and the National Treasurer, to me, it, you know, doesn't look good that if the Department of Defense, you know, approach the National Treasurer for assistance to ensure that, I mean, those companies like Denel are salvaged. It makes it difficult, Chairperson, the behavior in the Department of Defense, and also, I mean, the failure of the Department of Defense to comply with the requirements as per the National Treasurer. So now, Chairperson, I'm just looking at it now that when we are talking now that how can Denal be salvaged? And because now, the budget continues being cut in the Department of Defense, surely what we're thinking of that maybe Department of Defense will assist, because we cannot run away from the fact that, I mean, that the Department of Defense has got a major role to play in order to have, I mean, companies that are surviving, I mean, to get it, I mean, them, I mean, assisted in order to provide the services that are required from them. So this is the question, Chairperson, what will be the consequences, I mean, if the issue of Denel, or if, I mean, Denel is not, I mean, salvaged, and what is going to happen now between the Department of Defense and the National Treasurer, because the two departments should be, I mean, working together to ensure that we get more money to deal with those issues and make sure that, I mean, we come, I mean, to a situation where we are able, I mean, to meet the demands as required in the Department of Defense and other defense companies. The issue is money, whether we can continue blaming the Denel, but on the other side, we must know that we have the responsibility to ensure that Denel is salvaged. But if the Department of Defense, there is no change, there is nothing, that the relationship or they start complying with the requirements, I don't think we'll see anything happening, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Malek, because the name on the screen. Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, I know one person who is involved in the defense industry. And when I asked him about the defense, defense investment fund, he was very, very negative. Amongst other things, he said that it has never helped him and he doesn't know of anyone who was ever helped by it. And that it doesn't have money. And when they move out to go to the private sector, to the banks to ask for funding, the banks are not interested in funding matters related to defense. So, which means the possibility or the room for emerging BBB people in this industry, it's zero, because without any capital injection, you cannot take off. So what are we doing to ensure that we actually reach, even if we do not, because we can't give everybody money, but at least explain to them, you know, what the opportunities are in this sector. And the worst thing is that some of these people are retired soldiers. They were in the ranks of colonel some many years ago. And, you know, it's so sad when somebody, the only person you know, says something very negative. So I just want to check how are we supporting this emerging BBBEE companies or companies owned by previously disadvantaged people. Thanks, Honourable Minister, and thanks to the members. Honourable Minister, you would like to say something before we take over, I mean, before the answers and clarity seeking questions are engaged. The floor is yours, Honourable Minister. Is the minister still in the meeting? If not, so let's give over to SecDef. SecDef, I didn't see your name on the list earlier. That's why I did not acknowledge you.
No problem.
Yeah. And I hope it doesn't reflect it. I mean, you know. Thank you very much. You're welcome. And if you may leave your charge in the answering of the question. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I think that let me just locate, maybe start with the issue of why we thought that it would be prudent for us to have an industry lokhutla. The issue is that the fiscus is not, it's drying up. And then also you will see that because of that, it has impact on all government, and defense is not an exception to that. Now, so the idea of having the Lekgotla is to say, let's have all the brains that deal one way or the other with issues of the defense industry to come together and investigate the possibility of how we can resolve these problems. Because we have a DPE, we have a DOD, we have a JCPS cluster, we have trade and industry, we have all the other ones. And by the way, the National Defense Industry Committee is made up of the defense industry itself, and DINEL included. There was a question asked about this. And then we have also the DGs that sit in the NDIC. Now, NDIC is to be chaired by the Minister of Defense. However, the minister delegated the responsibility to the SecDef, and the NDIC sits on a quarterly basis to look at all these things precisely. And probably, Chair, it may just be prudent that in future, maybe we are invited to then really do a presentation, but that will go deeper into looking at the issue of the aerospace and defense master plan. Because like it was said before, it was thought that if this is one of the best master plans we have come up with, and we thought that it will give impetus in really changing the picture of our defense industry. But as you would see, part of those will have to do with a special defense account that we know now really it doesn't have money. In the current year, as we speak, we only had 1 billion rand that was voted into it. And that is money that goes into your multi-year projects. So all those projects that carry over from 1 year to the other, simply because of the time it takes to produce those capabilities, we have to carry the money over. So some of the things do have actually been impacted by the unavailability of money. The second thing that I want to say, Chair, is that initially you will see that defense denial was what it was, purely because of the acquisitions that were made by defense through AMSCO. Now, if then the budget of defense is cut the way we all know how it has been cut, it has had a cascading effect. And also by extension, that we will then have problems with our own capabilities, and then also looking at the issues of maintenance and things like that. So I think it's important to do that. When at first we were dealing with this issue, we actually burdened ourselves about the issue of DNL as the Department of Defense, until at a certain point we said, let's call the JCPS cluster and deal with this matter. DNL was invited, they presented to the JCPS cluster. And from that, we actually realized that there is a lot of procurement that is done in the security cluster. However, we were not buying from our own. And I think one of the speakers that had spoken today was then saying that, why are we buying from outside? Now, after we had looked that even just from the government side, if the JCPS cluster can procure from DNF, it will make a significant change, and it will be a good dent in what it is that DNL is doing. So it's important that we are doing that. I mean, if I know that Honorable Maliake was asking about what would be the consequences of delay in dealing with the issues of DNL. I think that the sooner we deal with the issues of DNL, the better it is going to be. Because also it is a strategic asset that a government has taken a decision that it's an asset that we needed to keep. And the rationale behind that was that if we are a democracy that is worth its own salt, we then have to, one, innovate, do R&D, and then produce all for all our needs that are needed by our cluster, and specifically defense, they should be produced internally. We cannot, and I think from a security perspective, we will know what it will mean if we have to rely on our major capabilities from external. So it has its own implications. So we need a solution to the issue of DNF. And of course, I think that in all fairness, even within the department, we've been looking at that. One of the things that has been a disadvantage is that governance-wise, DNL reports to the Department of Public Enterprise. Meanwhile, the business of DNL is largely on the issues that keep the defense force going. So then it means then we need to have this dynamic interaction between both DNL, DPE, and DOD, and I think it's something that we are working on towards. Well, there was a question that was posed, and I think Honorable Mutsamai talked about it, to say that why do we need old people if their skills have been lost? Those are the skills that have been lost by DNL, and they went out in other countries. But even if those people were to come back, you know, how long do they still have to remain in the system? So we need also to be looking at recruitment and injecting young blood into this. And as we said, all these, they are critical. I mean, we are talking now about IP, and that IP, we have it as a result of R&D that we have done. And that's why then today you see that the department's IP is managed on our behalf by AMSCO and utilized by DNL. And he also mentioned the Dr. Kanyile to say that even now the bigger South African defense industry is saying, how can we tap into the IP that you have? And what we are trying to do now is then we have given the responsibility to AMSCO to say, go and think, answer these questions and see whether we can be able to monetize this IP and how are we going to monetize it and what is going to be the relationship. Basically, we need to have a proper model of how we think that we are going to deal with these things. The issue, for instance, on the possible losses, which was raised by Honorable Mutle, and also how AMSCO procure from the blacks, as he put it, but the transformation of the industry is to allow new entrants, and the blacks here will cater also for the colors, for the Indians and what, so that then it can be reflective of the demographics of South Africa, because really right now it is largely white dominated. Now the possible impact of the losses of the industry, I think that I've spoken about it. Dinel has two layers of SMMEs that it procures from. And if Dinel was to go tomorrow, we would have lost 60,000 jobs just from those two layers of the SMMEs that Dinel is procuring from. So I could not overemphasize the need for the agency to deal with the issue of Dinel, but also the importance of actually transforming the industry. Because if you have so many industries, some of them, they are companies of that are black women owned, that are just generally women owned, that have been marginalized in the past.
Have we lost the SECDEF?
Lose them. If anything at all, we need to prop them up. In terms of procurement, AMSCO does procure from previously disadvantaged groups, but I think that this issue of procurement and transforming the industry, we can never say we are at a point where we are satisfied. We need to continue doing that in making sure that we allow new entrants to come in. And that's why then transformation is very critical, even in our own defense industry. And then there was an issue, of course, here, I think it is Honorable Saba who was asking us to come back with a presentation on the contribution by the industry in creating jobs, but also how we go about the beneficiation. So it's a homework that we will need to deal with. One of the things that I need to mention, I remember some years ago when I was the ambassador, one of our marching orders was that we go there and promote our defense industry. So regardless of where you were posted to as an ambassador, you were expected to go and market. Yes, Dinel, as a state-owned entity, but also even in those things that Dinel does not produce, we were marketing by extension the entire South African defense industry, because the thinking was that at the end of the day, the money comes back to us here in South Africa rather than us losing it to other countries. So that's why it was important. I think, yes, I agree with the views that I expressed that we need to come up with a marketing strategy, because, and it must be an aggressive one that happens across the board or in government, because trade and industry travel, they should be able to market. Other departments in the economic cluster, they will travel. They must do that. We have DEFCOM. When we go there, we must do that. So I think that it's a responsibility that everybody has to do, just like what we were doing before about Brand South Africa. And this still falls under Brand South Africa, because we want to showcase what we are made of. And I think we have a good story to tell, because even if you went and look at the customers or the clients of Dinel, the countries that bought from Dinel, it talks to the caliber of the company called Dinel. And some of the things that we produce were amongst the best in the world, with the Western countries put together as well. We still came up amongst top in the world. So I couldn't agree more on the issues of the marketing strategy. And it's something that we probably need to look at and start marketing. Now, the NDIC, of course, I chair the NDIC. We are looking at all these issues on the master plan. I think Honorable Ryder asked for the master plan. It is an open document, but we can still make that available to you. Now, Honorable Ryder limited himself on the issue of PNP. The position we have taken as defense is that they are even assets that may be classified as non-core. But when you look at the business of defense, all those things, they are there. If we procure about two-thirds of our capability, what is it that is non-core? And even some of them that we think they are not non-core, when you sit, you look at them very closely, then we feel that they are non-core. But whatever the case, at the end of the day, we feel whatever discussion is going to be take place, we cannot be left out of it as DNL, because those issues, they are very critical for us. Now, in terms of Honorable Mafanya, he raised the issue of internal audit risk management. Actually, about a week ago in our joint EXCO, which is the EXCO of the UNISCO members and the EXCO of the civilian, which is joint, we were looking at our risk management strategy and then saying what are the areas where there are risks, so that then we are able to manage them, but also come up with mitigating measures as to how we are going to deal with that. And of course, it will be an incomplete register and strategy if we don't talk about the things that make the Department of Defense tick, and that is the availability of the capabilities and all the things that the Defense Force needs to be able to respond to its constitutional mandate of protecting and defending. Of course, there was the issue that was raised by Honorable Madre, and that was the NCACC the NCACC being more progressive. The reason why on that one slide, we were demonstrating that between 2016 and 2020, how much did the UAE spend on procuring military hardware? How much the Saudi Arabia spent on procuring the hardware. Now, the act is very specific about certain things. We cannot sell weapons to a country that we have a belief that those weapons can be used against its members. But we can also not sell if we think that they are violation of human rights. The same act says, every country must take into account its own national interests and economic interests. And all along, when the NCACC didn't approve the category A, category B, which we think that they are the most, the top of the range ammunition that we thought we shouldn't sell. We sold, but it was the other categories, not actually the category A and B. Now the NCACC has taken a decision to say we will sell on these ones. And part of the reason that we sold, when we did our own assessment, in actual fact, we did a deep and dive to say who are these countries, and that's why we came up with the figures that were showing us how much these countries spent on their military hardware. And that for as long, we also didn't, amongst other considerations, put up front our own economic interests, we were going to lose out, because if we didn't sell to those countries, they will go and sell to somebody else. Even when you look, you will see that, for instance, the countries that sit on the UN Security Council, they are also in the defense industry. They are also bound by the same laws that are binding us on the issues of the arms industry. But they are selling. Now, if you look, Open Secret is an NGO. They are then saying that, okay, yes, of course, the matter is sub judice, so it's there. And we are working with the government, the NCACC, the whole government. We are looking at dealing with this issue. because then if we were to lose that case, it will be the nail in the coffin on our defense industry. But also the defense industry contributes, I think, it has an opportunity to contribute significantly to our GDP. And the question that was asked by Honorable Mare, how can we assist you? This is what we want to say. Because you see, if you reduce even our budget, then we are not able to acquire. We are not even able to finish some of the projects that we have taken. So if we all agree that we need to fight for the budget, for the and see how we can continue with this, because then if then I've demonstrated here or mentioned to say that Dinel goes down, 60,000 jobs are lost. We are now even with some of the South African defense industry, with some of the decisions having been delayed, even though now we have ratified them. Some of the companies were blacklisted, some of the companies were penalized, some of the companies had to shed jobs, and it comes back to us as government. And Parliament is that arm of government that has oversight over us. But where we are at right now, we have to actually contrast that against the responsibility and mandate we have as defense to actually make sure that we defend and protect this. Master plan is very great. The only thing is that we need to implement it. But if you go deeper into it, you will see that some of the things, they are impacted by the same budget, and you will see that SDA was looking at the aerospace and defense master plan, because if we implement that, we will go a long way. Yes, it was led by the Department of Public Enterprise when they developed it. That's why their minister was supposed to be then the executive chair of the executive oversight committee. But if you look at all those things that come from the charter code, they are implemented by us. The National Defense Industry Committee is chaired by us. The South African Charter Council, it is hosted by us. The responsibility of the Charter Council is to ensure that we do achieve that transformation that we want in the industry. Now, if I am a small company, I innovate and I want to enter this sector. When you go to mainstream banks, they will not fund you that, because I don't know whether it is because of the misunderstanding what security it is about and things like that. Then one of those things that have to be established, and they are, it is already established, the fund. Now that fund is going to live out of the donation, or let me say the contribution that will be paid into it from the net income that the South African defense industry companies are making on a yearly basis, 1% of that. And that's why then we are able to actually say we will then prop up those new ones that want to enter into the space. There is a second one where a bit of homework has gone into that. That one is called the Defense Industry Fund. Now, if you have these small companies and they say, we want to go, we have been approached by this country on the continent and they want to procure from us and they don't have money. This one, it then assists those companies that want to go and do business external to the borders of South Africa. But largely we thought that would utilize the continent as a for starters, just to make sure that we are on our feet to actually fund them. So it's very, very important that we need to deal with all these things. And I think that when we do have this Lekgotla, it is going to actually assist us a lot to deal with a number of challenges that we are facing. And that's why we were of the view that it is not one department or one company in the industry that will have all the answers. When we get a very lively, viable, well-operating defense industry, it can only benefit most of us. So that's why it is important that we need to look at all those things. For me, I think that over and above the skills that we have lost, we must look at it also as being the glass being half full, because we can now recruit new young people, inject them, then they will also learn from the older ones that have been there. So then you are, because at some stage they are going to retire, and we have to have young blood that we inject into the industry. Because as I said again, is that if we don't innovate, we don't research, we don't look at development, then it becomes difficult even for us to possess any IP. And that's why on an ongoing basis, we need to be looking at this. And we are where we are at. And Dinel did very well. And it has shown in the past that if we put our minds together, we should be able to deal with the issues of Dinel. And we can even do better if we continue with that innovation. So those are some of the issues that I thought I needed to deal with. But I'll hand over to Dr. Kanyile to deal maybe with whatever issues I may not have addressed in responding. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, SecDef. Just to add on one or two aspects, taking the issue of transformation as raised by Honorable Mutle and the Defense Industry Fund. Let me start with the transformation issue. That AMSCO continues to procure from for the defense, and therefore it will be able to enforce transformation requirements. That is very, very true. AMSCO does do that. It's one of the requirements. But just a sobering fact is that, you know, if a company, and I'm saying this with absolute respect, a company that is exclusively focused on exporting, meaning it is not reliant on government contracts, it's highly unlikely that it would, unless it's got a progressive way of thinking, that it doesn't have to comply with all of these things. Because the code provides incentives in the form of points for companies that are dealing with the state. But if the state, if the company is not dealing with the state, then you have a problem with transformation. Therefore, when it comes to Dinel, Dinel has got a whole host of companies in the supply chain that support it. If it is not getting contracts, it will not be able to procure from those companies, which means they will also evaporate. If the SNDF is not placing contracts through AMSCO, AMSCO is not going to be procuring from whoever, which means as part of that, the code will not be that effective. Coming to the Defense Industry Fund, as the SecDef has indicated, it has a particular a focus, but also another very important aspect of this is that the fund has to raise capital, both locally and internationally. And capital, once raised, it has got certain conditions. It means it's not providing grants. There is still risks to be managed, which risks can only be managed if there is some kind of support from government. In other words, there is a lot that still needs to be done there. I'm aware that at some point the fund was trying to engage the likes of state-owned enterprises, which have got funds. which could potentially be used to invest in the fund, but there was no success from the fund's perspective. Now that basically means that if government does not have confidence in the fund dedicated exclusively to defense, why should others do so? As we already said, as the SECDEF indicated, the financial development institutions of the country do not like it, the commercial banks and also development institutions. They are specifically prohibited by their own memoranda of incorporation to do anything that has to fund anything that has to do with defense, which means this defense industry fund was actually the only mechanism that was meant to support existing enterprises in the defense space, up and coming and emerging enterprises. But if it is not capitalized, then it will have a challenge. Most of the, I think all the questions have been tackled from Honorable Mare, that SECDEF has already responded to them. We will supply the plan, the master plan, to the committee. So we'll email that. I don't think there's anything else that has been left out. Now, on the question of weapons, local designation of those weapons and ammunition, honorable members, the idea about this intervention is that once there is traction within the government space, then you could potentially expand that designation to the broader private security industry one way or another. And besides that, it will enable South Africa to penetrate the African market. If you look at what is happening, just by way of illustration, if you look at what is happening in the global space today, where there's a lot of where there's conflict in Europe, Africa has got a lot of military items that are coming from countries like Russia or from that side of the world, which all of a sudden are now going to be faced with challenges going forward in terms of maintenance and so on. Now if South Africa had a solid small caliber weapons manufacturing and maintenance capability, it will be able to take care of the void, as it were, to fill in the void, or at least do something about it. In fact, it will contribute towards, it will enable African countries to focus more south than eastward when it comes to the procurement of small caliber weapons and ammunition, knowing that there is sufficient capacity to back it up, to maintain it, to replace it, and so on. I think the issue of litigation is self-explanatory. It will definitely obliterate the defense market, the defense industry, and therefore everything has to be done in that space. I think the SECDEF has taken care of all these other questions, unless I've missed out on something. Thanks a lot, Chair.
No, thanks a lot, all members here, the comments and answers to our questions. Some matters were further clarified Are there further questions that members would like to ask?
Jefferson, just a question of mine that that was not asked. Oh, that was not responded to. I was making questions with regards to the what is in the charter and where it refers to black-owned companies. So I was asking whether that was referring to the same definition as the black economic empowerment policies, or whether it is solely black. That was the one that I was asking and did not get a response to. Obviously, in terms of SECDEF responded a little bit in terms of what we can do, but that hopefully there will be an opportunity that, and she has indicated that maybe they'll come back and tell us, you know, this is where we need your help and things like that, so that we can move forward. Also on, just on what my colleague Honorable Ryder has asked, you know, on the one hand, we are aware that the NEL has said to us, and we know that last week the presentation of Arms Corps and the presentation of the NEL to a very large extent, you know, was basically pointing to opposite directions. I was asking to what extent was there progress with what the SECDEF has presented to us at that stage that they have approached defense industry stakeholders, in other words, members of the defense industry, to do those developments of missiles and even other programs like maintenance. So I was asking what is the progress that was made there. And then specifically on the NEL, you know, what we were trying to get to is we know that there will be rationalization in the NEL. And as my colleague has said, that there are some of those divisions that is essential for us to maintain and to keep for the benefit of the defense industry, but also for the SANDF and for the protection of South Africa and our integrity. So, and then there are certain divisions that might be closed down. There are certain divisions that are maybe totally R&D that we know that must be funded in a similar way as the CSIR. And then there are certain divisions that can certainly take in equity partners and or be sold to the highest bidder. And there are people that is prepared to do that. But if we are sitting back and doing nothing, then we will lose everything. And so I think there's a lot of frustration that we are not moving fast enough in that regard. So I was asking that as well, and I'm sure my colleague Honorable Ryder was also referring to that. And I didn't got really a response that I can say, okay, now I have got a better understanding of where we are. It's kind of hanging in the air, and there's no committal responses. So I'm not quite sure that we are any, that I know more than in the beginning. I'll appreciate if there can be responses to that. Thank you.
Chairperson, if I may as well.
Thanks, Honourable Madam. Is there another question? Yes, you're welcome. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Yes, I'm partly covered by Mr. Murray, and I appreciate him speaking out on my behalf, because I do think that the response on the NEL was I'm not sure that it was strong enough, and we don't, we got nothing new from what
you're
we had.
You're speaking so softly, I can hardly hear you.
Okay, Chair, I think that may be your issue, not more than mine, but yes. I don't think we've progressed on Donnell, and I do want that matter raised. But one thing that the SECDEF mentioned that she highlighted, which was a particular concern to me, is the fact that she indicated that some of the IP, there was either, I'm not sure if it's a request or an expectation from other South African industry, defense industry players, that the IP of Donnell gets shared with them. Now, I'm not sure if I understood correctly or if that is what has been mooted, but frankly, I think that might be a little bit unfair on South African taxpayers if IP is transferred certainly without some sort of payment or a good agreement about profit shares or shareholdings or something going forward. So if we can just have clarity on that comment that came from the sector about the IP of Danel being shared with other South African industry players. Thank you.
I could hardly hear you. Am I audible?
Yes, yes, you are. And we could hear you.
Yeah, no, thanks. SecDev, may you respond to some of the questions as they were asked? That is the questions that were not satisfactorily answered, and some of them were totally not answered anymore.
Okay. What, Chairperson, what I was alluding to in relation to the issues of the IP. The IP, it is owned by DOD, and it is managed on behalf of the DOD by AMSCO. Now, all the things that Danel produces, that IP is ours. So that's why AMSCO is managing it. Now, when I think I spoke to at least give a sense of who are those that constitute the National Defense Industry Committee, that we have the industry itself, and then we have departments like our own, your treasury, your public enterprise, your trade and industry, and other ones that come together. Now, when we had the last NDIC meeting, it was, I think, last year, November. We were then, the industry was then saying, we would want to benefit from the industry, from the IP that the DOD owns and is managed by AMSCO. And we need to have discussions around that to say, can we exploit that? I mean, basically, it's the issue of commercialization. Commercialization of the IP. How do we monetize that to make sure that we also generate income on it rather than it sitting there? Now, to that extent, I then, as the accounting officer, wrote to the CEO of AMSCO to say, can you please investigate all the issues that had been raised by the industry in the NDIC meeting? And then so that you come back to us as a defense, as a department, so that we can then be able to discuss the matter on our own before we actually revert back to NDIC and say that let's start having discussions on that. So we need to look at that, the pros and cons, the implications, if you charge and things like that. Basically, it will be like, for lack of a better example, Microsoft is what it is from their IP. And now they are monetizing it. And that's how companies will buy the licenses of Microsoft and things like that. So it is a new issue that was raised in the last NDIC. And I mentioned that NDIC only sits once a quarter. So we will be sitting on the 16th of March to have another NDIC meeting. But that work that AMSCO is doing, they are still working on it. It has not been finalized. And we also think that it's a serious matter. It is not going to take one sitting and we arrive at the decisions, because the matters themselves governing the issues of IP are very complex. So we are not going to sit in one sitting and deal with it. We must take it also to the leadership within the department and take a position as the department to say, what do we do? What good is this IP if it is not going to help us to generate income amidst the environment that is fiscally constrained? So that is basically one of those things. Now, from the issue of the maintenance, yes, it was agreed that the South African Air Force was going to review the user requirements in order to fit the availability of the budget. Remember that when last week we talked about Dinel and AMSCO. It was largely around the issues of the Air Force. But this matter is not only about the Air Force. And one of the things is that if you look at the age of our capabilities, does it still make sense at this point to say we are going to rely on OEM parts when these parts can be found in the country? If we are saying we want to boost the defense industry, why not buy from ours and be married to buying from the OEM when we have capabilities that are so old? Most another industry outside South Africa and not move on that. And then also remember that there was that issue on the Gripen that we talked about. For what I know is that AMSCO is engaging with SAB to really look at these things. And we have also asked that our efforts must be part of the engagement that AMSCO is going to be dealing with so that then we don't lose all these. And for what I know is that the SAB is amenable to listen to what we have to say in relation to the contract, because we were feeling that whatever they are also asking in order to service these aircraft was actually asking way too much, that even just paying that was unaffordable for us for those ones. And we also wanted to only service those ones that we were using, not the entire fleet of what we have. And then with regards to our own Falcons, our Falcon spares, they are already in place. So I think we are making progress on that. But we can also still find out from AMSCO if there's any further progress. So I think when the presentation was made last week, there was already those ongoing interactions with these relevant companies that we needed to talk to. So I can give you right now what I'm aware of, but we can always try to find more information from AMSCO as to whether they are succeeding on that. But that is where we are at. And I'm going to, I think that there was an issue about the protection of the industry. I think it is very important for all of us that we have a viable defense industry, South African defense industry. Hence our thoughts behind having this Lekgotla. We are bringing the brains behind the industry. People who are involved in the defense industry. People who understand the defense industry. And that's why we think that the portfolio committee needs to be part of that, so that then tomorrow when we come, we say this is the state in which we find ourselves. It must be within the context so that we all understand that this is where we are at and what is it that we're doing to put our heads together to make sure that we take this industry forward. So I think that is what I wanted to answer. I will now hand over to Dr. Kanyileche, if you may indulge me, to then respond on the other one question.
Yes, over to Dr. Kanyele.
Thanks a lot, Chair. On the issue of the code and the black entities, the definitions there, the code makes use of national legislation as far as that goes, as to who's black and so on. So it's not unique in any way from that point of view. But it does make a distinction in terms of what is a black-owned entity, what is a black women-owned entity. It says all companies with a 51% and higher will be regarded as such. So there is a sliding scale that determines the types of companies that are owned by black people. It also talks about companies that are international by nature, companies that have that are headquartered elsewhere, but have a local presence. And it, you know, it it takes cue from the defense review definitions of the various companies. But as to black owned, it's 51% plus. And it has a scorecard that measures at least six elements in terms of which companies are measured. That starts with ownership, with management, control, skills development, enterprise supply development, localization, and socioeconomic development. So it is not that unique from other codes. The only additional element that differentiates the defense sector code from others is that it also has a military veterans element to it. So that is what basically differentiates it from others. Even the scores that are there, they are more or less comparable with others. I hope that covers that question. I can just add as well on the issue of IP. Chair, we can have IP, but if that IP is not being utilized, it is useless. In fact, in no time it becomes outdated. So AMSCO, each time it goes into a contract with any service provider, they are required to determine whether there is any new IP development involved. Once that is confirmed, then the proportions are allocated. Let's say, for example, there is a 50-50, 60-40, 30-70 between government, meaning DOD, and that company. So whatever it gets generated, it will have to be managed in terms of those splits. But now, the share of government IP ownership, it does not limit AMSCO or government to exploit its share of IP in the market. Because AMSCO is an acquisition entity, it is allowed to generate income, which it can do by getting others to exploit that IP. So I thought let me just emphasize the aspect on taxpayer, that it's unfair to the taxpayers. In fact, by exploiting or commercializing IP that government owns, it's actually stretching the value, extracting value on behalf of the taxpayer. So it is good for the country. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir. Members, are there further questions that members would like to ask? I can see the hand of Bartlett and Muta still up and Maliake's hand. Do you want to have a second bite?
Sorry,
it was an old hand,
Chair. Sorry.
Old hand, Chairperson, sorry.
Oh, no, thanks a lot. Is the minister still in the meeting?
I think she's still connected, Chair.
Honourable Minister, do you want to say something? In closure, before we move to adopting the committee program, I think that one we can adopt it after everybody has left, so that we remain as committee members and adopt the program. Honourable Minister, the floor is yours. No, she's no longer in the meeting with us. Honourable Kaba, do you like to say something before
No, Chair. No, Chair. No, thank you so much. I'm covered.
Okay. In the absence of the minister, we're looking forward to receiving the master plan, but at the same time, the budget agreeing, allowing, we should have this endeavor. With those few words, I'll release the department and members of the committee can remain.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Sir Dev. Thanks.
Thank you.
General Sanguine.
Chairperson, we received the letter from the President. Are we not dealing with that tonight?
May you fly the agenda again. Oh, there's a letter on Operation Vigela, and then consideration and review of the annual performance plan of the committee, and then consideration and an adoption of minutes of the 9th December and the 17th of February and the 24th of February. Honourable members, we have all seen the letter from the President on extension of the contract, the employment contract for our soldiers in Mozambique. It is on the table. Is there any comment that members would like to?
Question just from my side, if possible.
Hello?
Yes. Chairperson, just from my side, Kovas Murray.
Yeah, Honourable Murray.
Thank you very much. Obviously, we are glad that we have received the letter, and if Honourable Kaba has done some intervention, thank you very much, because we spoke about that last week. I am just very concerned, and I don't know whether there's any explanation for this. Because remember, we have said, and we have had the examples where we have met on virtual while we were even in recess in the past. This letter is dated the 28th of February. So if you look at section 102.3, it clearly says when the Defence Force is employed for the purpose mentioned in section 2, the President must inform Parliament promptly and appropriately and in detail. So I am just concerned. I don't know what happened, and I don't want us to be in a conflict with the President. I suspect it was an administration matter, but we need to know, if there is any reason why this is clearly not reasonable and promptly that is prescribed in the Constitution. So whether that was an oversight by him, whether that was an oversight by staff, it is just quite very, very important that we must, that we must not read about this in the newspapers and not get, communication from him. So I just want to know whether something has been done and whether there was communication to the President's office.
Honourable Raider, your hand is up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, Chair, just to emphasise what Mr. Murray is saying, and I think perhaps that's why the SecDef was so keen to leave the meeting with such speed. I actually think that either the Minister or the SecDef does owe us an explanation as to why this letter has come up so late, and in fact, I think that it was mentioned before that the best we can note the letter, but you know, we don't have any answers on it. We don't know you know, who has been deployed. We see a number, 1,495 members of the SANDF that have been deployed. We don't know specifically which units, which arms of the Defence Force have been included, etc. So, yeah, it's from my point of view, the letter's noted, but there's certainly it gives rise to many questions. And if one considers the mandate of this committee, we should be getting answers to those questions. And frankly, it's the minister, the Secretary of Defence, and the Chief of the SANDF who should be answering those questions. So for the purposes of tonight, noting who's left online, I don't believe we can deal adequately with the letter other than to say we noted. Thank you, Chair.
I suggest, I think it was an oversight on my side. I never thought that we'll end up discussing this. Please forgive me. But it's not a train smash. I think what you could do is to write a letter and ask SecDef.
That would be appreciated, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, you know, that's good. You can write to the SecDef, but this is not a SecDef responsibility. This is a president's responsibility to write to Parliament. So the Department of Defense and SecDef is not actually involved in this letter. She can provide us the information, yes, in terms of the units that Honorable Ryder was talking about, but not in terms of the letter. Thank you.
But just throwing caution to the wind, other members. Some of the things, even if we are necessary for us to know, but I don't think we should expose our forces out there by even saying the kind of equipment they are carrying and all that. I think further some details should be left out of the reports. And if that is to happen, it should be maybe in a closed session, I guess.
And I
really don't think that this is you. This is what you are saying. I don't think you are saying that.
Chairperson.
Yes, is that Honorable Murray again?
Yes, Chairperson.
Honorable Shalembe.
Yeah.
Oh, Honorable Shalembe, yeah.
Yeah. Chairperson, I think we must accept that the issue of non-compliance is permitting a number of departments. Now, if they come to a situation where the president of the country who is in charge is not, doing things in compliance with the relevant legislations, you know, it's easier for the lower departments not to comply with all the relative legislation. Because from the head, compliance is not upheld. So I'll suggest the letter be not written to the Senate, but the letter be written directly to the president that the committee is of concern that every time when we get these letters, we find they are not in compliance. Yes, we understand that, well, it's here for us to note, but for us to keep on rubber stamping or noting, it means now it is brought to us just for attention, even if there is a non-compliance as required by the Act. I would suggest that maybe not that one is trying to be like funny with the president, but what we are trying is that as the head of the country, he mustn't be seen as the one who's not, respecting the laws. That he's the only person who can say, please do the right things in South Africa. So that is my request. If the letter be written directly, but not fighting to say we are not happy about the delay and the non-compliance with the relevant legislation. Thank you.
Can I say something on the issue?
I guess that, you know, we have communication lines, how we talk to the executive or to the president. So the staff will look at what protocols they follow, and the information will definitely end up in the on the president's desk. Honorable Kaba, your hand is up.
Yes, thank you so much. I want to disagree with the two colleagues, in fact, the three colleagues, Mr. Mare, Mr. Raider, and Mr. Shalembe. I think they are misinterpreting the provisions of the Constitution in respect of the matter. The Constitution is very clear. It says the President must inform Parliament promptly and in appropriate detail of the reasons for employment, any place where the force is being employed, the number of people involved, and the period for which the force is expected to be employed. And the Defense Act goes on to say that the President must inform Parliament of the expenditure incurred or expected to be incurred in such employment. I think those details in the letter that has been sent to Parliament, I don't think we should expect anything more than the listed things that the President has informed us about as per the clause in the Constitution. So I think the letter, in my view, meets the requirements of the Constitution, both in detail and also in time, because it doesn't specify the period within which a president must inform a parliament. All what it says promptly. We promptly has been interpreted to mean without unreasonable delay. So I don't think that a period of about a month could be considered to be really out of, outside what the term promptly. I don't think we should really get to that level of writing to the president, and because the letter it complies. I think the president has complied with both the letter and the spirit, with both the letter and spirit of the provisions in the Constitution. I wish we end this matter at that. And if colleagues want more further details, more details than that which are specified in the Constitution, so that's a matter that could be transacted on another occasion in a closed meeting. We can't reveal those details here, given that the people we are talking about are deployed in mission where they risk with their lives. So I think let's leave it at that for now. Thanks.
Chairperson, no, we can't just leave it like that. We've got a committee resolution, and the chair is walking away very, very easily from that committee resolution that we took. Now, this period is ending in April. So if the chairperson feels like it is promptly to just notify us prior to the end of the period, that might be adequate for him, but that's certainly not promptly in terms of anybody's definition. It also says that the Constitution is very clearly...
Honorable Mare.
Yes,
Honorable Mare. Honorable Mare.
Yes, sir.
My mic was muted. I was saying that just raise your hand if you want to speak.
My apologies, sir.
There is still a chair in the meeting. And I gave an opportunity, sir, to Maliake, but he didn't hear me because his hand was raised before yours. But you may continue.
Okay. I'm just going to complete. So I don't want to fight with the chairperson, because in the past we have been on as committee, not as individuals, on the same page on this.
Just
one.
Give us the necessary legislation that you are quoting that says that we need to know.
Well, it is specifically section 200, 201, 3, and specifically 4, where it says that if Parliament does not sit during the first 7 days after the Defence Force is employed, as envisaged in subsection 2, the President must inform, you know, in terms of subsection 3, to the appropriate oversight committee. Now, clearly, it gives a days of 7 days, and that is what we as a committee have been used in the past to communicate with the President.
I don't know whether it's my network or yours, but I can't hear you now.
Okay, but I am online, so my apologies for that. But I think, you know, we must just stick with our resolutions of the committee. Otherwise, we must put it onto the agenda that we change our resolutions. But we can't just walk away from that whenever, you know, some person feels like it is now time to walk away from that. It is. I mean, in the meantime, we cannot give the proper support to our soldiers. And what will happen if another one is killed in action, and we are supposed to have oversight over that? We don't want to see our soldiers in body bags returning. And if we do not have the information, and if we must read in the newspapers about that, or in SADC press releases about that, you know, I mean, that doesn't empower us to do oversight. So that's my input on that one. Thank you.
Honourable Mare, against our concern, my concern, like I said earlier, that I don't think it will be wise, unless if you want that information desperately, it could be given in a closed session. I don't want the details of how many people, what kind of equipment is there, and what divisions.
Yeah. I don't want what divisions are deployed there.
I really think that detail will not be necessary in an open meeting. So
I agree with you on that one.
Yes, Honorable Remaliake, your hand is up.
Yes, Chairperson. I don't like, I mean, that maybe you open an argument about that. Well, I can see, I mean, the co-chair is trying to make this thing like he is becoming now defensive. But what you are saying now, I raised that question in a previous meeting, that the role of the committee when it comes to the issues of these letters must be known. If that letter is just brought to us just for noting, then I'll understand. But my concern is, when are we going to, I mean, agree on that meaning of prompt? Because, like, to me, that if, I mean, we don't look at that word prompt, it means that can even take over a period where, I mean, until the period that is meant for has expired, and they can come back and say, I have sent the soldiers. I don't want that say, because the president, I mean, but if there's something as a committee that we see it is going wrong, we have to, I mean, to show it's just a matter, as you, Chairperson, correctly said, we must look at the ways, how can we communicate in terms of the protocols to ensure that such similar things does not occur. Because if you keep on like defending, it's like now, even if things are wrong because of what the president, let's keep quiet. I'm requesting, Chairperson, what we have suggested, let's look at the protocols, I mean, line. How can we show our concern to the president that we are not happy that it is whatever is doing is not in line with the legislation, as Mr. Honorable Mare has showed in the act that what he's saying, what we are saying is not from our head, it's from the act itself. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm done, Chairperson. I think the issues of interpretation of the act here, where we are not finding one another. And I'm going to suggest that
we need to give this matter to the legal department of so that we can sit down and discuss what is our understanding of the workings of this committee and our relationship with the presidency and with on these matters of letters. I'll suggest that we do ask the legal people to take us through at least for an hour or so.
Thank you very much. I support you.
Yeah. And then from there, we can decide whether we need to engage with the president about the matter when we are clarified.
We have the legal opinion. If the colleagues don't have the copy of it, I will share it with them. I will send it to the WhatsApp to the chat group of the committee. The legal opinion was clear and it defined. It unpacked the term promptly, and it says, in our view, that's what they said. In our view, that by necessary implication, the provisions require submission of the information promptly, that is without unreasonable delay. The question we are facing today, was there any unreasonable, it doesn't say there must be no delay, was there any unreasonable delay? That's the question. And I then said, I don't think there was any unreasonable delay. That's the reason why I then felt that it boils down to the issue of interpretation. And if it is so, let's leave it at that, because it means that we're not going to resolve it in this meeting, despite the legal opinion. Maybe let me share the legal opinion to the colleagues. Maybe it will help them. Can I do that, Chair?
Thank you very much, Chair. That will be appreciated.
Will do. Thank you so much.
But again, Chair, is obviously in terms of... the Chairperson, thank you very much. It is obviously in terms of what Honourable Kawa has just said, is what is reasonable. And I think what we have said last time is what is reasonable. And we as a committee took a resolution in terms of what our requirements was or request was to the presidency. And it's most certainly not reasonable to let us know about a month and a half after they have already been there. So that's nearly 2 months.
But Honourable Murray, you are repeating exactly what you said earlier, and there was a suggestion in the House that we need to share this information, and then after that we can still have time to engage with this matter if people want further clarity. And my neck tells me that. And I'll suggest that we move on that note. No one is going to be surprised not to talk, but I think if we put this matter on the table again, maybe there'll be a different understanding on both sides. Can I suggest that we move from this matter to looking at the program?
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Mood.
I'm not disputing the fact that we must move. And what other colleagues are raising. I just want to some extent support you, but we must do as someone will be engaging. We must take into consideration what the Act prescribes. And the Act is very clear that the President or must inform the committee, and it prescribed a particular period that we must be informed. Then if it is outside that particular period, that is why we are having the discussions that we are having currently. I don't think it's for us to change
the content of what we have been informed about, as much as we have to note, but in terms of the time prescribed by the Act, it should be adhered to. I think if I'm not missing the point, that should be communicated correctly. So.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Mute. Ndatemafanya.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I'm
covered by Mr. Mute. I am covered by Mr. Mute. Including that, and I think we can take the route that you are saying now, but I'm covered by this. Thank you.
Chair, I've already shared the legal opinion.
Yes, Coach.
I wanted to say that I've shared the legal opinion. It's very clear. There is no prescribed time. All what it says promptly. And the legal opinion defines promptly to mean without unreasonable delay. Thanks.
Yeah, can we give members enough time to refresh their minds about people say they understand it differently. Let's give them time to get that.
Not for today. I think we're running out of time. We're left with 15 minutes, yet there are still other items on the agenda.
Yeah, there's something that we need to move from this matter. The information is distributed. And then if members want us to have a second bite on this matter, I think we can. But knowing that this matter was discussed by the committee, maybe some members have forgotten about that discussion. Let's give them time to look at the document, and then if they see it fit, we can engage with the legal opinion again. And I want to suggest that we move from this matter and move to the next one. If it's
a great chair.
Yeah, if it's okay with everyone. Can we flag the action plan, the plan of the committee?
Good evening, Chairperson and members. This is just a review of our annual performance plan. Members would remember that last year we had a session at the Sheraton Hotel in Pretoria and for 2 days, and then we derived an annual performance plan as well as a strategic plan for the committee. And one of the things that we should do is each year we should review, especially our annual performance plan. Chair, so if you allow me, I'm just going to give an indication of the number of meetings that the Joint Standing Committee on Defence had. You can see this here in the first line there. Last year we had around 22 meetings. 2020 we had around 14. And for the half part of 2019 we had about 7 meetings. And then one can also then just see the how the previous Joint Standing Committee in the fifth parliament and done, 2018 around 7 meetings, and 2017 around 18 meetings. So in detail, one can note that we have improved on the number of meetings and some of the other blockages that were there. And those things one can also note came from the legacy report of the fifth parliament. Say, I'm not going to be too long. I just want to focus on specific issues that I think we should consider, especially towards the end of this quarter, for the second quarter's term. So one of the outputs is legislation, and that is not applicable to the Joint Standing Committee on Defence. The second one, output two, is about oversight. And here is just an indication as to how we've done in the previous year. Obviously, the number of letters from the president, the situation will determine how many letters we will receive. But there was an annual target set for 4, and I think we have more than 4 letters during 2021. The quarterly reports, we're quite up to date with that. It's just, normally we have the 3 quarterly reports, and then the 4th quarterly report is combined with the annual report. And then what we've also decided at the strategic planning session is that we should also have a deep dive into certain issues. And one of the issues that was identified that we carried over to this year is the one on succession planning. We need to have an investigation around that. And I think that the motivation derived there was basically, if you look at the Defence Force, many a time one sees that those people, especially in senior positions, when they are about to retire or when they should retire or reach the age of retirement, their contracts were extended. That is the one thing. The other thing was also, how can we actually get more younger people into the top structures, the top decision-making structures of the Defence Force? So those were some of the reasons that we said we should actually have a succession planning investigation. And for this year, there on the right column, you can see it is the gender parity. And I think it's something that we've all been very concerned about, especially the prevalent presence of females in the top decision-making structures of the department. Now, related to these deep dive issues is that in the middle of a term, like now in the 6th Parliament, we should actually draft a strategic overview. They call it a midlife term. And those things should relate to transformation, integration, equity, and morale. And my suggestion would be that if we plan for the succession planning, that we also do this strategic overview. But this is something that we need to do from the 3rd quarter onwards. With regards to oversight visits, members are aware, in the previous time, we had, I think it's in 2020, we had a visit to 1 military hospital and to the borders. And then last year around July, the members went to Gauteng as well as KZN with regards to an investigation there on the unrest in those provinces. When it comes to military veterans, we are planning, we did plan an oversight visit to the headquarters. It wasn't done, but now at the end of March, we are likely to go and do that visit at the military veterans headquarters. One of the issues that we said that if we do go to the military veterans headquarters or the provincial offices, we should actually go and have a look at how they actually run their database, the whole issue of optimization access for military veterans. So that is with regards to the oversight output. The next one relates to what I've just said, and that is where we can have public involvement and participation. And as I noted earlier, you know, this will have to do around the 3rd or the 4th quarter. The baseline is, for instance, when we had the CMR Civil Military Relations Symposium, and we also had a force design and a force structure symposium at the defense headquarters. Chair, the other thing is the output international cooperation. And I think we plan to have an oversight visit at the end of last year to the DRC. This didn't come about. So I think that is something that we need to consider at the end of this quarter, and as well as maybe a study tour to countries where we can engage with their force design and the force structure. Chair, just briefly, and it relates to some of the things that have been said in this meeting tonight. It is the letters from the president, especially that it should be timely when Parliament is not sitting. But Ms. Taba has now shared that letter, and hopefully next time we can just confirm what is going on with regards to the timing of the letters. So the other issue is just that we said we should follow up, you know, whether South Africa is actually reimbursed for the deployment as part of the SADC forces in Mozambique. So that's the thing that we need to follow up. Another issue is the whole issue of military veterans. And the question was raised earlier, does or should the joint actually entertain issues or matters relating to military veterans? If I can just go to the end of this, Chair, you will note that this is the Joint Rules Committee, and where they decided what are actually the functions of the committee. And there one can see, you know, the last matter there, it says there, where applicable, JSD must, where applicable, in cooperation with relevant portfolio and select committees, report to both houses on matters affecting military veterans and perform any other function, exercise, any other powers assigned to the Joint Standing Committee by statute in terms of resolution. So, Chair, this is just something that we need to discuss and decide about how much are we going to integrate the military veterans into our discussions. Chair, the next one is just an oversight visit and study tour, something that I referred to earlier. And one of the challenges that we have here is that the programs of the two houses are actually not synchronized. And sometimes we have challenges with quorums. One military hospital, I think we're on top of that. We know what's going on there. At that meeting of 2nd of September, we said we want the executive summary, but also the full forensic report. And I think this is a discussion that maybe Mr. Chaba has with the department as to whether they will give us the full exact report or not. Chair, the next one is just about the NCACC, something that we discussed tonight, but this didn't come up yet. Chair and members will remember that there was an issue where the department have not filed opposing past papers in the case of the Open Secrets and Amnesty International. We will refer tonight to that, but whether they've actually filed the opposing papers, I'm not sure of that, and maybe we should just have clarity on that. The next one, Chair, is something that we discussed in the meeting this week as well, is with regards to the investigation of the military ombud, with regards to the investigation that he should conduct when his soldiers receive apparently rotten food. But as we have said in this meeting this week, the military ombud should complete his investigation and then just come back to us. The next one is just with regards to the special defense account, something that we all really concerned about. Only 1 billion rand for a multi-year program now, multi-year projects. We're concerned about that. And we then said that we should actually maybe have a look if we can have a meeting with a Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, and actually that they should share with us, you know, are some of these issues that we are concerned about that's not shared with us, you know, are these issues actually being discussed there? Chair, point 8 is just about the broader debate around defense matters. And there we just note with regards to the oversight visit to KZN and Gauteng, you know, that our military operates as a conventional force. And some of the equipment that they've used there wasn't quite for sort of riot control, if I can, or public order policing equipment. And we just said there, you know, there should be a debate about the utilization of the defense force and the appropriate funding of, and that we need a strategic direction given the limited funding. And hopefully going forward, we'll be able to discuss this. And then something that we've done tonight, Chair, is just about engagement with the defense industry as well, the defense sector charter of the ending. So, Chair, this is just briefly a review of the annual performance report of the committee. We are fairly on track. There's just some certain issues that we need to flag. Going forward, need to include it in our quarterly programs. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot, honourable members. There's the program. The plan of the committee. Any comments from members about?
Excellent work, Chairperson. Well done, Peter. Thank you very much.
Hello? Come again?
Chairperson, I just say excellent work. Thank you very much to Peter and our staff. Excellent work.
Very excellent. Any other comments?
Yeah, no, Chair. I just to concur with Honorable Marais. I think this plan is well set out. NetAPP is just one that we must follow this year like we did the past year. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thanks a lot. Honourable members, this meeting, is there another item on the agenda that I might have forgotten?
Yes, Chair, there are still three sets of minutes.
Oh my God, I'm so spent. Oh, minutes, three sets of minutes. We talked about
not
them
tonight. Not tonight.
May you play the first set of minutes?